I need to open a company for that financing for our friend Hillary.
Oh, just put it on the gay talk card.
No.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio. You can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. We have a great show for you all today. We have two great guests. The first is Candace joining us, our co-host for today, and also the host of the Breezy Moms podcast, a sister show and part of the family here at Digital Stream Radio. And we also have with us a fantastic group of men calling themselves the Dragon Dads. Don and Jake are fathers of children in the LGBT community who chose to support their children, even though it meant going against the teachings of the Mormon faith. Super excited to talk to them both. My name is Tom, and I'm your host. And as always, I'm here with my good friends, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And today,
Candace, hey guys.
And also,
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
So let's jump right in. We have so much to do, so many people to talk to, a surprise for all of you. But why don't we start with our cocktail today, Christopher?
Yeah, since we're having Dragon Dads on later, Trish wanted to go with a dragon theme cocktail.
Yeah.
So this is from WeDelish.com. We are going with the Dragon Lemonade.
Explain.
Yes, it's very easy. It consists of one shot of dragonberry rum, 8 ounces of cold lemonade, and ice. Mix all together, shake up, and you're good to go.
That sounds yummy.
Yeesh.
I want one.
I want to do the one that was on fire, but it just seemed a little intense.
Yeah, a lot of fire. Explain.
There was one that was like a flaming dragon breath or something, and there was fire involved.
Flame the shot on the top. That sounds yummy.
It's always good. You know, we do our cocktails and we drink and drink and drink. And then by the end of the show, all we're doing is speaking cursive. And I love it. So how is everyone? How are you? You good?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pregnant this week, but lovely. Other than that, you know, it is what it is.
And Christopher.
And by pregnant, I mean bloated.
Yeah. I can't. Christopher.
I'm good. Thank you.
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
And of course, we have Candace in the house. How are you, Candace?
I'm good. I'm good. I changed my shirt to come here.
You look amazingly beautiful.
Something a mother would say.
I was just thinking, I hope that they don't smell my perfume too strongly, but I was trying to mask the smell of peanut butter, breast milk, and like a peak meltdown.
It's okay, baby girl. We're all gay boys, you know, so.
That's a complex
cologne, perfume,
mixture on the palate.
Right. Yeah.
Breast, none of that, you know, affects us in any way, shape, or form. But
well, I mean, like, I've never, you know, breast milk. I'm glad I don't have to. No
offense.
I
feel like it has a powdery texture to it.
But it doesn't, though.
It doesn't.
No.
All I remember is from Weeds when Andy had to suck the breast milk out of Lori's tits, and he swallows it. And she's like, "You're not supposed to swallow." He's like, "That's an interesting flavor."
So, but wait
it's
a minute.
It's actually delicious.
So
really,
we can pump it, and you can use it in your coffee, Chris.
I'm good. I mean, I'll stick with almond milk.
It's better than almond milk. Okay, as someone
like
who's
flavor-wise or nutrition-wise,
both. Hmm.
It's made for human consumption.
Breast milk is healing, and you can use it all. I know people who keep it, like who end up with a whole lot of it after they don't need it anymore. They make eggs with it. They put it in coffee. I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but it's healing. You can put it in anything that hurts, right? I had pink eye. I used breast milk to heal my eyes.
You just like squirt it in there?
Well, I had some. I put it in a syringe. I went to the eye doctor, and he was like, "Oh, have you tried using anything?" I said, "Yeah, I did breast milk." And he go, "Where did you get it from?" I was like, "My breast? What are you walking around asking people for
milk?" It's perfect for quiche and bacterial infections.
Right. So Candace is a mother of two. She's got a 4-year-old and a soon to
two.
Be. 2-year-old who's soon to be 3, right?
No, he just turned 2. Yeah, 4 and 2.
So, you know, she's still breastfeeding, and which is amazing, and I empower women to do it wherever you want to do it, and you should be able to do that. But welcome to the
show.
Thank
you. Thanks
and it's
for having
wonderful
me.
To have you people. She is the voice behind the Breezy Moms podcast, which airs on Digital Stream Radio every Thursday at 7:30-ish p.m. Because, you know, just like us, we're a hot mess.
Same issue there.
Same issue.
Whoa.
Sure.
Tell us a little about the podcast. Here we go.
Well, my show is a parenting and lifestyle show, and I really enjoy coming on and talking about whatever is, I almost said afflicting, and whatever's going on in my life, because oftentimes it's easy to feel overwhelmed by it all and feel like it's just you and feel like you're sort of failing and trying to figure it out and nobody else can help you because it's just you. And what I like to tell moms is, like, you're not special in this area.
Yeah.
Like, this shit sucks for all of us. And the only reason you keep doing it is because you love your kids and you love your family. So I like to do this because it makes me feel better to know that I'm not by myself, especially when I hear back from people who are like, oh God, that happened to me yesterday. And to let other people know that you're not alone in this parenting thing.
So I want to throw her a curveball. I know you have a surprise. Should we wait?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Okay. Yes.
I know. She's going through it.
So
I got to be on my feet all the time, on my toes all the time, around you guys, around my kids.
So speaking of mothers, right, I'm going to jump into one of our first stories, which will probably be the only story that we'll cover during the first half, because this will probably take us a bit. I want to talk about this woman named Sarah Cunningham, right? She is a mother from Oklahoma who wrote last week on her Facebook page the following, quote, "If you need a mom to attend your same-sex wedding because your biological mom won't call me, I'm there." I read that and that immediately struck me. So there was a CBS News report following the Facebook post that she made, talking about the Facebook and why she did that and her conflicts, etc., with her faith and having a child that's part of the LGBT community and all that good stuff. And I said to myself, wow, you know, it'd be amazing to talk about this on the show. And then I said, no, I think we can do one better. I think we should reach out to her. I think we should see if she would allow us to call her during our live broadcast and talk to her so that she can tell us a little bit about why she's doing this, what she's all about, and all that good stuff. And I am actually going to give her a call.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. So I reached out to her via Facebook Messenger.
It's all about moms and dads.
Yes.
All like, about it's moms just and happening. Dads. I love it.
And someone in her camp, I believe Katrina was the name, emailed me back and said, yeah, no, sure, she'll be willing to talk. So I said, you know what, we're gonna give her a call. So I'm gonna give her a call now and see if she answers, and we'll hopefully have a very, very amazing conversation.
That is so exciting. I was so in my feelings when I read that story, like bawling.
It's awesome.
Hello.
Hi, am I speaking to Sarah?
Say howdy.
Well, hello there.
Howdy.
Hey, y'all.
Hi, is this Sarah?
Perfect timing. I just opened up your website, and what a good-looking bunch.
Why, thank you.
Don't lie.
No, I'm not lying. I'm looking at all of this wonderful stuff. I thought, who am I talking to?
So,
well, thank you so much.
Sarah, can you hear us all okay?
I hear you just fine. How many of them are you?
Well, there's four of us in the studio today. So I'm Tom. I'm one of the hosts on the show.
And then there's me. I'm Nick or Trish.
I'm Chris.
Okay.
Hello. I'm Chris.
And we have a fellow mother in studio who does another show on our network as well. And
I'm Candace. I'm just here for the night.
Well, yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Fantastic. So, Sarah, I read your Facebook post, and then I also read a news report from CBS News, which talked about your endeavors and you posting such message, asking anyone who didn't have someone, a mother specifically, in their lives, if you needed one for a wedding, call me and I'll be there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Thank you. Well, some people have pegged me to be the accidental activist.
Yes!
That is my favorite term. My favorite term.
Yeah, but I've started to tell people that I feel like I was forced into a position that I was created for.
Ooh, I like
and
that.
By that I mean born and raised in Oklahoma and raising two sons in a conservative state, in a conservative church. We served there for 20 years. Our youngest son came out to us, and we experienced the alienation and devastation that comes from just navigating through that of acceptance. And we experienced just devastation from our church family, from some of our family members, not all of them, but from parts of society. It was right in the middle of the Chick-fil-A debate and the Boy Scout debate and all that stuff. And oh, it was devastating. And, I say the journey took us from the church to the Pride Parade without losing our faith. And I just got plugged into the community and just started showing up and making myself available, and just was just blown away by the sense of community and the beautiful spirit-filled people that are just blocks away from my home that I just had never interacted with or just never, you know, paid much attention to until our son came out to us. And we stood at the Pride Parade with him in 2014. In 2015, I made a homemade Free Mom Hugs button, and I pinned it to a sundress, and I went to the Pride Festival, and anyone who made eye contact with me, I'd say, can I offer you a free mom hug or a high five?
I want a free mom hug.
Like right you now. Got it. I'm sending it. I'm sending it right now. It's a cyber hug. You better just brace yourself, because coming in.
So...
Before long, I just made friends in the community, and a beautiful couple that we just adore said, hey, you know, after 23 years of being together, you know, marriage is legal. And just after it became legal by the Supreme Court, they contacted me and said, Sarah, would you marry us? We, you know, we're older. We've been together for so long, but we need to, you know, just secure a home, you know, our benefits, things like that. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'm not ordained. I have no idea. So, but I was talking to a pastor friend of mine. He said, Sarah, let me ordain you. I'd love to do that for you, because we'd worked on other projects together. So he knew me. He knew my heart. And so I did. I got ordained, and that was my first same-sex marriage, my first officiant position. And I was thrilled. I was thrilled to do that and get that gift. And so other people started asking, and then I just started hearing horror stories about how the uncle's going to wait in the truck while the vows are being said, or, you know, protesters showing up if it was a public announcement made in the paper, mothers not showing up. It was just, it's like, you know what? And the post was really made out of frustration. I was just frustrated, said, look, if your biological mom can't come, then, you know, I will come and I will celebrate you. I'll be your biggest fan and I'll bring the bubbles. It was out of frustration, having no idea.
So
no idea.
A question for you. How many proposals have you gotten so far?
Well, I'm still addressing private messages, but there are probably 7 to 12 serious ones. And if I can make it, by God, I'm going. I'm going.
That's amazing. So, you know, you're doing something very selfless, because one of the hardest things in the LGBT community, especially for a child who grows up and wants nothing more than what anybody else would get, right? A nice wedding, family, friends, everyone gathered. One of the hardest things for some young person who wants to get married is to not have the support of their immediate family members, because that's very special and important, right? So I was reading this report on NBC News, and in it said something about you had an issue when your son came out reconciling your faith with his orientation. And you had mentioned that you went through and found a group on Facebook of other mothers going through the same thing that helped you a lot. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, I'm happy to. You know why? Because it's good news. Because here's what happens. When Parker came out to us, I thought it was okay about everything until it was our son. But suddenly, when he came out, I felt like I was the only mom in Oklahoma with a gay kid. And I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't know where to look for resources. And so I'm going to plug myself, but I wrote a book about our journey. It's titled How We Sleep at Night, A Mother's Memoir. I'm not a scholar or a theologian. It's just how I got through it. But about the same time that the book came out, almost to the day, I found a private online Facebook group for moms with LGBTQ kids. We started with 250 moms. And what is shocking to me is that we all had the same story. We all had the same story. Our children may vary on the spectrum, but we had all experienced just devastation from our church families, our immediate families, and again, society. And I thought, we have got to have this conversation, because families are just being blown apart. And moms are feeling like they're having to choose between their faith and their child. And it sounds absurd to even say this, but guys, I needed to hear from someone who shared my faith that it's all right to search this matter out. And do you know what happens when you search a matter out? You get educated on it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you realize that you've been duped. We have been duped.
Why am I here today? It's my... Like, she's saying everything I always say.
Because we all have the same story. Mm-hmm. We all have the same story. It's like, what the heck? And I thought, if I believe my son's going to hell for being gay, then I need to stand up and fight for him like my hair is on fire. Mm. And as I got educated and found the resources and the support group and found my voice and learning about this beautiful, dynamic, spirit-filled community, I'm fighting for them like my hair is on fire. And last thing, and I'll shut up, but I feel like there's a mother out there like me then who needs a mom like me now. Mm-hmm. And because I saw people accept my son and love him when I didn't know how to or even if I wanted to. Now, that's shameful to admit to, but I'm telling you, that's where fear and ignorance will put you and keep you. And the only choice is to remain in fear and ignorance of what it means to be gay. That's the only choice. And yes, my hair's on fire. And if I sound mad about it, yeah, I'm damn mad about it. I'm damn mad about it.
So, Sarah, I have a question. So,
I love it.
How many kids do you have?
Two.
So you have two kids.
I have a straight son and a gay son. And listen, I'm the least politically minded person you will ever meet. Mm-hmm. But when I realized that my straight son has more rights than my gay son, oh, I got to figure this out.
You know? That's so beautiful. I think the whole country needs to figure this out.
But I guess my question to you was, so you clearly educated yourself and you wrote a book to educate other mothers. How did you go about your family educating your straight son and your husband or your child's father? Like, how did you go about changing that that conversation so that it was supportive for Parker?
Well, let me just say, my husband, first and foremost, he had a gay sibling who passed away early in life, and so he knew about having a gay family member, and he has cousins who are beautiful and they're gay. And so he'd been around that. I'd just never been around anyone who'd gay. So I had like Liberace, the Matthew Shepard story, and Elton John, you know, for our examples. So, you know, you see what kind of ignorance we're dealing with on my side anyway. So, but he was very supportive of Parker, and very supportive of me. In fact, Parker wanted to come out around the holidays, in which he did, but my husband, Rex, I also call him the Silver Fox. But he said, Parker, just wait until after the holidays. Just don't do it before the holidays, knowing that I was just going to have a meltdown. And I did. I didn't handle it very well at all. I'm ashamed of that. But this is the reality that we're facing. So he came out the day before Christmas Eve. And I remember that day was a pivotal moment in our lives.
Can I just say that I've talked about it on the show. When I came out, my parents weren't receptive. They didn't handle it well. And I don't need to go into my whole story, but what I do need to tell you is that in time, whether or not you had that moment where you needed to process things, whether or not he mm-hmm. holds anything against you, he will forgive you and he will love you even more mm-hmm. because just as he was going through something, you were going through something very similar mm-hmm. and you have to acknowledge mm-hmm. that in order to love one another and move forward in life.
That is so true. And Parker's been so graceful because he let me ask all the weird questions like, who's the guy? You know, all that thing. He's been so wonderful about it, and all of his friends too. And it's been a wonderful experience for me, but I'm lucky. I still have my son with me.
You are.
He didn't get, you know, into self-harming or at-risk behavior or, you know, worse, suicide or murdered. You know, I still have him. I know parents who don't have that privilege mm-hmm. to be able to have the weird conversations with their kids. But I do encourage the community. I encourage moms to have relationships with their children, authentic relationships, and the community to just keep talking. Keep talking as long as anyone will listen. And what do we got to lose?
And I think it's so important. I mean, you brought up religion a couple times. Whether or not you're religious, God wouldn't give you any more than you can handle. God gives you what you're supposed to have. If you're religious and that's what you believe, then you need to sit with that and then acknowledge that this beautiful life that's been brought into your life is brought into your life for a reason, and that's what you've done. And now I'm getting emotional. So somebody please.
Oh my God, you're making me cry now.
So Sarah, let me ask you a question. You mentioned you were talking about your son coming out, and he chose to do it the day before Christmas, but you said that his father told him not to tell you, to wait. So you mean to tell me that dad knew before you did?
Oh, yeah. Well, they all say, like, Sarah, how could you not know Parker was gay? Everybody knew Parker was gay. But, you know, I was praying that gay away, guys. I was, like, burning the sage in his room. I was, like, throwing out his journal. I mean, I was, like, tore up. I was, like, I just was, like, burning that sage. The things I did. I always manipulated the conversations or just kept taking his spiritual temperature, thinking some holy bolt of lightning would just come down and just make him normal, parentheses, you know? But that never happened. When he turned 21, he came out officially.
You know, you're such...
It was on.
You're so strong to be able to say that you did those things, because in a way, it's sort of like a shameful moment in your life. You're trying to change something about your son that's so basic and visceral. And for you to be able to say that out loud is going to give so much information and education to people and moms out there, because so many mothers wish that they could change their kid. My mom still talks about my girlfriend from high school. Honey, it's not happening. Like, it's clearly not happening.
You know, I think that your conversation and your story and the story surrounding your family and specifically around your son deserves a very well thought out sit down process talk to you. We would love to schedule you to officially be a guest on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And talk about your book, talk about what you do for work, because I know that you work for an organization that does great work as well. The reason
Thank
why I'm
you.
Saying this is because we do have a group of fathers from Utah who went against their faith, right, the Mormon church, to support their gay children. And they're going to be calling in about 5 or 10 minutes. You're more than welcome to listen in on digitalstreamradio.com to the rest of that conversation. But it was truly an honor to have you call with us and speak with us. I'll have Nick has something he's going
to
say.
I just want to ask one more question.
Go ahead.
Just to follow up with what I was saying earlier. You were talking about saging the room and trying to change everything. Now, right now, in this moment, after you've been through everything, would you change your son, or would you even imagine trying to?
No, not at all. My only regret is not celebrating his life in his adolescence and not having that time just to celebrate him, you know, discovering his identity. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but no, absolutely not. It's made me a better person. I experienced God to a much greater degree, and absolutely not. Would I change anything?
I cannot Good wait to have you on and chat with you.
She needs to be. So we have Miss Kim, who's one of our honorary mothers. You will become one of our honorary mothers. Sarah, I want to thank you for taking a little bit of your time to talk to us today. I think that your conversation and your story is really going to make a positive change for our community.
Well, thank each one of you. And there's a poem out by Maya Angelou, and I just want to take a little glimpse from that, but saying, you're my rainbow and I'm yours. Come on now. Okay. And John Pavlovich said, I woke up this morning looking for hope, and there you are. There you are, each one of you. So thank you for the platform, and we're in this together, so let's go.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. So we'll be in touch. I'll have Nick reach out, and we'll officially schedule something to have you as an official guest on the show. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was, again, Sarah Cunningham from Oklahoma. Amazing story. It really touched me when I read the story on Facebook, and I knew that I had to have her on the show, at least if not just to briefly talk about, you know, what really moves her and carries her. So, and of course, Trish is like, I am, but you know, you book all our guests. So.
Yeah, I know.
But, all right.
So before we break, Candace, how did that make you feel, that conversation as a mother?
It's intense, right? My kids are little, so they do mostly what I tell them to do, except the little one doesn't pay me no mind. But the thing that resonated with me is she said that she didn't know anybody. She said her husband had a couple people in his family who were gay, but she didn't know anybody. And it always occurs to me when people say that is I just think they're not listening to the people around them. They're not looking with the right kind of eyes, because I think often you think you don't know anybody who is gay, mm-hmm. Is on the spectrum, and they're usually right under your nose, mm-hmm. like right in your family, your own kid. You know, she was walking around for years saying that she didn't know anybody who was gay, and her own son was, right? So I think it's just, it is incredible that at this stage, right? She's a grown woman now, right? It is awesome of her to be able to say out loud that she was saging the rooms, mm-hmm. and trying to change things and realizing now that that was wrong. Because a lot of times you, as a parent, as a mom specifically, you are supposed to know what to do in every situation and you're not supposed to do anything wrong.
And how beautiful is it that she can say something, I wish I was in a place where I was celebrating myself.
Right, right. All like, those years. Because everybody else knew, right?
Honey!
and she knew, which is why she was saging, right? It wasn't that she was totally oblivious, but it's really hard because you have an idea of what your child, who your child is and who you think they're going to be. And when that's totally spun on its head, it's hard as a parent to know what to do with that. And it's shameful when it matters so much in this situation, but it's incredible when you're able to grow from that and everybody else can sort of grow together. And she like basically keeps her son out of the statistic of kids, mm-hmm. who have to suffer through so many years with family who don't support them.
Yep.
So, amen to that.
Preach.
So on that note, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got Don and Jake joining us, Dragon Dads. Here's some music. We'll be right back.
My head gets caught in the moment, but my heart doesn't know it. Heart doesn't know it. Somehow I'm lost in the lonely, but it's too hard to show it. Too hard to show it. Dansez avec moi. Dansez avec moi. Dansez avec moi. Do I fall? Sun on my shoulders, the sun's on my shoulders. My heart's a winding road, but I can't control it, and nobody knows it. Do I fall in love? 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 Do I fall? You are the one to make me think twice, and you are the one I wanna spend my life.
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was Davis Mallory, a previous guest of the show, with Dance With Me. Love that song. It's so rhythmic and gets inside of you, makes you move and do all that good stuff. So let's get to the task of hand. Joining us now are two fathers, Don and Jake, better known as Dragon Dads, a group of fathers who chose to support their children who are part of the LGBT community, even though it meant going against the teachings of the Mormon faith. I want to thank you both for joining us. Welcome. And how are you guys?
Great. Thank you.
We're doing good. Thanks for having us.
It is our pleasure. And I'm going to let Nick kick it off.
I just have my first question for you is, did I offend you when I called you guys Dragon Daddies?
just me.
Only slightly.
Oh, Jake.
I'm kidding. No, not at all.
So for our listeners, just so you know, I emailed them and was not paying attention, and I wrote Dragon Daddies and was responded with, just so you know, it's Dragon Dads. I was like, oh my God, they're not going to come on the show now.
It probably auto-corrected, right? Like, you've written that a couple times?
Yeah, right. You know, once or twice. Yeah.
Way to throw me under the bus.
I'm just saying, facts.
Lord have mercy. So guys, first of all, can you tell us where you guys are calling us from?
Yeah, we're actually in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Nice, nice. Awesome. So it's nice and warm right now, I would say.
117 degrees I saw on my car on the way over here.
That's madness.
And you are in a two-piece suit here?
He's wearing a sport coat.
Yeah.
AC works great out here, though.
It's also not humid there, right?
No.
Not at all.
117 is still 117, I feel like.
Right. It's like putting your oven on broil and then just letting it sit there for like 9 hours and opening the door and just let it smack you in the face.
Hashtag golden brown.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I feel golden brown. I was in a boat today.
Anyway, off topic.
Yes.
Task at hand.
So guys, so welcome to the show. I want you guys to talk to us a little bit about Dragon Dads. Where did it come from and why is it so important?
I think the best way to kind of little bit of a backstory is to tell you just how I kind of became involved in the whole LGBTQ community. And this is Jake here talking. My son, when he was 13, he came out, told my wife and I that he was gay. And shortly after, we were super active Mormons, you know, really involved in our local community. And you know, the short version is he essentially came home, he told us he was gay, and he said that he was going to come out, you know, and tell everybody at school. And he was in seventh grade, and not knowing a lot about it, we were kind of like putting on the brakes, like, hold on a second, you know, and I have all these kinds of fears that just uneducated. I don't know really anything about what to expect. We are in the really safe state of North Carolina at the time, where they're super pro-gay, so that was good. Picking up on the sarcasm, I hope.
I was going to say.
I was like, that's not the North Carolina I know.
I was going to say, wait, are you sure? Because, I mean, that's under the Mason-Dixon line. I'm like, no.
Let's talk about Clay Aiken, can we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He worked at the YMCA that my mom used to go to before he was Clay Aiken.
Talk about bridge over troubled water.
Has he come out yet? I don't know.
Anyway, we essentially decided to come out to our congregation at church that was our kind of our community and our family, if you will. And so I composed a letter that was not just coming out, but it was also kind of giving some statistics that I was able to Google really quickly about acceptance and depression and suicide and things. And then my wife, she actually decided, she said she wanted to write just a little paragraph in it. And in her paragraph, she said that when he came out, that she felt like this mama bear, you know, but that didn't feel strong enough. A lot like the mother who just called in earlier, you know, she similar kind of mindset, but she felt super, super protective of our son, but she didn't feel like bear was strong enough, and she felt like she had talons and scales and could breathe fire. And if you messed with our kid, that she was going to literally destroy you or burn you to a crisp. So she felt like she was a dragon. So she said that in that little paragraph, she said she felt like a mama dragon. And then shortly thereafter, the next couple of months, as we kind of became involved in some of these communities that were out there for fringy or post-Mormon, gay, something, you know, we start to know a lot of people, and a lot of these other mothers asked her if they could be mama dragons because they said they felt like that the same way. And so almost overnight you had a group called Mama Dragons that was formed. And, you know, you have a bunch of dads on the sideline who probably are supporting their kid from afar, love their wife and say, okay, yeah, you do the support thing. I'll be here and support you from here. But it quickly happened within the next year. There was a lot of dads, or I should say a lot of the husbands of these Mama Dragons who were emailing my wife and saying, hey, what, you know, where do we go? You know,
what about us? So,
present.
You know, yeah. It's like, I want to be a dragon, you know, and
don't we all?
Cool. Yeah, dragons are badass. That's kind of course. But anyway, so that's kind of how we did. We just there was I think maybe four or five people, and as you probably know, you can create a Facebook group in less than 90 seconds, and we had four or five names. I had no idea what we were, but we at least knew who we were. So that's kind of how we formed it, like initially. So, but yeah, I don't know if Don has anything on that, but
yeah, that instinct to protect is just kind of sitting dormant, and you don't really need it because you don't know your kid's gay, and then when your kid comes out, you all of a sudden look around you and this community that has literally had your back through some really hard times and good times, they all of a sudden everyone's like a potential enemy, and you come out with your dukes up.
Right. So you're talking about the Mormon community, correct?
The Mormon community, and whether it's totally justified or not, whether some of it's in your mind, you know what the doctrine is, and you know how awful it is, but it hasn't been personal, so you've been able to just kind of, oh, that's too bad, and just move on with your life. And then all of a sudden it's not. And you have this lifetime of knowing what it means to be gay in the church, and all of a sudden it's your kid.
Right.
And you just want. So I'm a couple years behind Jake. My daughter came out a couple years after his, but fundamentally it was the same thing. I got up in what they call fast and testimony meeting. It's like an open mic Sunday, and I kind of just declared my we kind of came out as a family and declared my that I was there to support my daughter and anyone else in the congregation that needs it, and I had this sense that like, okay, well, we're just gonna help everyone understand. We didn't understand before, but now we understand. And so once everyone knows that my daughter's gay, you know, they'll be fine. Everyone's going to be cool. And then it's just this slow realization that your whole community is just not compatible with your life.
So let me ask you. So you said, you know, as you just said, the community is not compatible, that particular community with the LGBT community or having a child that's part of our community. How bad is it? Like as soon as you mentioned it, can you tell us specifics of what it was that they did to you, your family, or how they made you feel, anything that they said?
Made you leave the faith?
What made you leave the faith that you literally said, no, 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 this is my child. I can't do this no longer.
So this is actually a really important distinction. There are local congregations full of specific people, and then there is the central church that dictates what the policies and doctrines are. There wasn't really a whole lot negative that was done by the individual people, with a couple little exceptions. But what it is this message about what the church doctrine says about gay people. And even if nobody does anything, even if nobody says anything explicitly to you, you are taking your daughter week in and week out to this place where they are hearing that there's something wrong with them.
And they don't belong.
It's just, they don't belong that... Or no, you belong. You please come and join us. Just, you know, don't be gay, or don't act gay. You can be gay, but just don't act gay. And it's just this subtle erosion of like what, like the very core of who they are is not okay. Wait. It's not compatible with eternal goodness.
Wait, hold on. Can I ask again? So you just said no. It's now you can be gay, just don't act gay. What do you mean by that when you said that?
So the church has shifted over time, and their tone has gotten a little better, and they've made some very specific changes about what their stance is. And their current stance is that being homosexual is not a problem. It's not a sin.
Okay.
You can be gay. Thank you, Mormon Church.
And if I could interrupt, they even have a separate term for gay that has an acronym called SSA, which is same sex attracted. It's like they cannot say the word.
Mm. Okay.
So you can be. And it's kind of not the running joke, but it's really the sad joke is it sounds like it's an affliction. It's like you have SSA, mm-hmm. you know.
I have it.
Yeah, like you can have it as long as you don't do anything about it, you know.
And I've done something about it.
Yeah. Or because, you're done. You're going to hell.
in years past and decades past, like even being gay was a problem. It was inherently a problem.
Right.
Now they're graciously allowing you to be gay. They just don't allow you to do anything.
And you can be gay, you just can't do gay.
One important thing to realize is that, you know, the Mormon faith is not the only faith that has some sort of issue with being gay, right? But what separates the Mormon faith from Catholicism, for example, or evangelicalism, is the fact that the Mormon faith predominantly comes out of Utah, right? It's that's his home base. And a lot of the people that live in Utah are Mormons, right? In a large part of the state. And a lot of the congressmen and a lot of the people who make laws and local law officials are Mormons. And a lot of the laws that are being passed based on a faith, which can then affect a community. So when you look at, for example, Catholicism, or when you look at, the evangelicals or any other faction of religion, the impact is not as bad as it is in the Mormon faith because of the demographics.
But also to play devil's advocate
a little bit.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I would equate in a weird way Mormon to Judaism in the sense that it's not necessarily just a faith. It's a lifestyle. It's the way you live, right?
Like,
so it's the way you're bred. It's your family. And so coming into that and hearing all of this as a gay individual or a part of the community, you feel as though you don't fit the mold. And that's why there's such a separation between the community and maybe a higher spike in suicide or homelessness, because it's not necessarily just about the faith. It's a lifestyle. It's a family.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think the biggest, a personal statistic for me to kind of support that is if I go back and I look at all of the friends that I had prior to my son coming out, who I knew through the LDS Church, which was probably 80 to 85% of my friendships were probably Mormon. I mean, that's how tight Mormonism is. I probably brought, since 2013, I probably have brought forward maybe five of those people into who I am now, because it just doesn't, there's no room. It's oil and water, you know, there's no room for it. And it's probably mutual, you know. I mean, we no longer kind of understand each other in the same way or see things eye to eye. But it is. It's you kind of start over completely, mm-hmm. and there really isn't a lot of space to keep a lot of those relationships. So it's kind of sad.
But it very much is a culture like right. Judaism. It mm-hmm. permeates everything. Right.
So I kind of want to take a step back a little bit and go back to the coming out. I just want to hear a little bit about your experience as dads. When your son or daughter came out to you as a Mormon, how did it affect you? How did you make that choice to come out as a family in front of your church? What was that experience like for each of you? And how did you know your child was more important than the church?
Can I add a layer to that question? Because it's a little bit of what I've been thinking about. No. I like that question. I want to know how, like, as a parent of two smaller kids, I've talked a lot about knowing when to listen to your kid, right? Like, as a parent of toddlers, like, there's a point where you're like, hey, I'm the parent. You don't really know what's going on. It sounds like your son was 13. I'm not sure how old your daughter was. That still sounds to me like really young and impressionable and not really sure. And I went through a whole lot of stuff when I was a teenager that I don't think I am anymore. You know, like, how did you know at that point in that experience that this was a hill that you were gonna take a stand on at this age, at this point for your like preteen child?
So you phrased that question perfectly for kind of our story. So my son comes out at 13, and I should preface this with about 6-7 months prior to that, my I had a sister-in-law who was almost engaged to a guy, and we all had become Facebook friends with this guy, and he was going to be the new uncle, so all the nieces and nephews, they all had kind of just Facebook. We hadn't met him yet, and anyway, somewhere down the line, he actually comes out as gay to her to tell her, I can't marry you. I've never loved anybody enough to be honest with them, to say, including myself, you know, to say that I'm actually gay. So he came out to her to basically call off the wedding. And it was the first time that he really had ever uttered the words or even accepted it himself. So we got wind of that, you know, and then it was kind of this Facebook friend that you don't really interact with anymore, but we're not, it was awkward, you know, because we didn't know how to get involved, not get involved. But the reason that's relevant, when my son was starting to have, he walked to the seventh grade, there's a ice cream place right next door, and they used to walk there on Fridays, and he walked there with a friend, and he saw two guys in a car parked outside of the ice cream place. And this is in North Carolina, a little liberal area, and they were kind of like, they were kissing, like not making out, but kissing, like, as you know, they were like obviously a couple, and one of them was getting out of the car, and he just saw them have like a really small intimate moment in the car. And he said for the first time, he was like, huh, that makes sense. You know? And that was really about it. He had never even like really thought about that and never crossed his mind, because we probably had unintentionally probably shielded him a little bit, you know? And so that got his mind kind of thinking. So he reaches out to this this friend, or this, at the time, the future ex-gay brother-in-law, you know, named Andy, who is probably is the most important person probably in mine and my wife's life at this point, because he reaches out to him on Facebook Messenger, and just out of nowhere, they've never talked. And the short of it is they spent about a week talking like in the middle of the night, because my son was like sneaking the computer into his room because he wasn't supposed to have it in there, and the kids in Utah, and so the time zone and everything. And bottom line is he was like, hey, so how did you know when you're gay? And, you know, and they're kind of having this conversation. And this poor kid, Andy, who had been finally coming to terms for the first time just 3 months, he was about 22, I think, served a Mormon mission, and was trying to listen to this 13-year-old kid and having no idea how his parents were. You know, we were going to fly out and wanted to hurt him or something, you know. He didn't want to like sway him. He didn't want to suggest. He just listened and kind of asked probing questions. And by the end of the week, 5 or 6 days later, there was a time, which is probably known is fairly common. There was a time too where he thought like halfway through, he goes, okay, I think I'm probably bisexual, you know, and they kind of worked it out some more. And at the end of the week, he said, okay, no, I'm gay. And then the very next line that Andy wrote, I mean, the very next line was, you need to go tell your parents, you know? And he goes, okay, I will. He goes, no, right now, stop messaging, go tell your parents, like right now, which was the best advice ever. But it was 2 o'clock in the morning. He couldn't do that. So, you know, and so he told us the next day, and he decided to tell us over a game of Hangman. So he actually, he's a goofy little kid. And we were currently watching the TV.
Did he write out, I'm gay?
No, even better. So we were watching the show The Office. You watched that at all at the time?
I love The Office.
And so he writes out these spaces, and his spaces are, I am like Andy. And so,
oh, wow.
And Andy in our mind was like months removed, you know? And so my wife says, from The Office, you know? And he goes, and then he shook his head. And for some reason, in that moment when she asked the question, his face went from really like kind of like excited to realizing, wait, I think this might be a big deal, you know? And he kind of shook his head, hung his head, shook his head, and he wrote the words gay at the top of his little hangman. And then, you know, she was like, are you telling me that you're gay? You know? And he kind of nodded. That was really kind of how he told us. And as far as me as a father, I knew right from the beginning that we had to get, I knew I was going to have to get on board. I knew there was a lot of things that I would have to unlearn, a lot of things that I would have to learn. I was willing to do whatever, but I also knew I didn't know anything. I was probably nervous. I was scared to let go of my faith, my religion, for which sounds crazy now, but for eternal like consequences. And then, but I was very scared to obviously handle this the wrong way for my son's, you know, safety and whatever. Like I said, he was going to be getting shoved in lockers and bullied and thrown around and that scared me to death. And so when he said he wanted to come out, and this is the coolest thing that he says. So he tells us he's gay, and then he says, "No, I need to come out. I need to tell people at school." And we're like, maybe not tomorrow. You know, let's think about this." And he said, "No." He says, "No, I know." He goes, "I've been Googling." This is the funniest thing. He said, "I've been Googling this thing called the closet. I don't know if you guys have heard of it." And this is how innocent he is, right? And so we're like, "Yeah, I'm familiar with the closet." But he gets really serious and he says, "This is like this deep, dark, depressing place. That's just not me." You know, he goes, "I'm gay. I know it. I know God knows it. I know it's fine," kind of thing. This is how he's coming out. But he says, "I know that there's other people around me. I know I have friends who are probably gay. And I need to come out so they know that somebody else is gay. So they know there's like safety that they can tell somebody else." So his motivation to come out was to be available for like his friends.
It's a mess.
And it was,
I can't right now.
At the time it was, I don't think we realized how profound or moving that was, you know, but now, thinking back on it, it's unbelievable as a 13-year-old, that's what his motivation was. So we drafted a letter, like I said, to our congregation. They said, let's come out to church people first. We had like a month left of school. We'll get through the summer and then you can come out at the beginning of eighth year and you can be as gay as you want. Right. That was kind of the
plan is coming out with him. I fucking love it.
When you ask as a father, you know, kind of, you know, like identity and how sure, like we were sure that he was gay and that he knew he was gay just because of the way that he kind of told us.
Okay.
But then school, then he did go to school the next day and he came home. He goes, "So I told two people today I was gay." I was like, "Oh no." I was like, "We're not, you know, we can't stop this." And so we decided to come out more across the board. We actually did a Facebook post. We took the letter that we wrote to our congregation and we did one coming out letter on Facebook. We created a blog right out of the beginning. And then what made us realize what a big deal this was as being Mormons, and as sad as it is, being accepting Mormons is in the first 24 hours of doing that, we had over 10,000 visits to our blog.
Wow.
that we had created like that day for that purpose. And that was kind of an eye opener that we were just like, "Oh wow, this is, there's something else here that we didn't really understand it at the time." But
right.
But that's, you know, that's how we kind of did it. But it was really never a question for us. I mean, maybe for a day or two, I thought maybe it was a phase because I didn't really know any better. But I think we both pretty much accepted it right out of the gate. It was never a question.
What grade is a 13-year-old in?
Seventh.
Okay. So can I just say really quick to Candace, when I was in seventh grade, I remember getting a love note from a girl. I'm not going to say her name on the show. And I knew I was gay in seventh grade. And it made me so nervous because she wanted me to reply, would I go out with her?
Yes or no.
Literally went to the nurse, claimed I was sick, and had my mom come pick me up.
So no, you know, right? You know.
Yeah.
You know.
Jake,
I knew I was straight. I mean, you know, if you just, you know.
Jake, I want to tell you what you did in the first 24 hours of that conversation with your son is a life-saving thing. It is exactly what every parent should do, regardless of how they feel about it, right? Your first important task is to nurture and protect your child. And you took that and shot it 20-fold down the street and landed in the next universe because the support that you gave your child at 13 shaped the man that he became. And all the things that he has yet to do and all the things that you guys have yet to do. I mean, you made this one cry, which is actually
that's not that easy.
Fairly
hard. hard, not that hard.
It's fairly easy. But I just want to let you know that I don't have a relationship with my father because of my orientation. And I think that what you're doing is an amazing thing. Don, what you're doing with your daughter is an amazing thing. And the reason being is because the earlier you can accept and nurture and love your child for who they are, the better their life will be. You know, there are children that are still, that are in their 40s, struggling with telling their parents. I know friends of mine that are in their later years, 50 and 60 years old, and said, if I were to tell my parents that I were gay, it would devastate them. So I just keep it to myself, and they just think that, you know, I'm just single for the rest of my life or whatever, or that my friend Becca, who pretends to be my girlfriend when I'm in their company, you know, is my girlfriend, and that's all they need to know. And they almost feel like they have to sacrifice who they are to make sure that their parents are okay. But you flipped this. You made sure that your child knew right from the get-go that they had your support. And that is important.
Yeah. I mean, like, just to tag on to that a little bit, I mean, we look at Utah and we look at the suicide rates. I mean, you look at the LGBTQ suicide rates nationwide, mm-hmm. but then you look Utah specifically and the spike is, it's honestly astronomical, in my opinion, because I don't think kids should be committing suicide because they're gay. But it's men like you and dads like you that are saving lives every day. And I know we've all experienced loss in this community.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally to suicide, and you guys are saving lives, and it's beautiful. And I'm getting emotional again.
She's a mess. So Don, obviously we've heard this amazing story from Jake about how his son came out. Can you talk a little bit about how your daughter, how your interaction with your daughter and her coming out was like?
So we had some drama leading up to her coming out that we were dealing with that kind of paved the way, kind of softened us a little bit. So she had an eating disorder that we were helping her deal with for about a year. It started when she was 13. And it was really bad, and we, you know, had to kind of come to terms with that it could kill her. It got pretty bad. And it was through this counseling and therapy that she was going through that she and her counselor helped her come to terms with the need to come out to us because she was scared. Even though we have an amazing relationship, I have three daughters. I feel like I'm best friends with all of them. But despite that, she knows what it means to be a Mormon. She knows I was in leadership. It felt really heavy to her. But we had just gone through a year of like wondering if we were going to lose her. So when she came out to us, it was just never a question to me. So when you're a Mormon, you are isolated and you don't really surround yourself with gay people, so you don't really know gay people, and so being gay is just this idea, and you don't, it's just this thing you think about, and you compartmentalize, and I had my own ideas about it. I was not fully in line with where the church was, but when your daughter comes out, it's not this like nebulous idea anymore. It's this beautiful person sitting in front of you. And it was just never a question whether I was going to support her and love her from the very beginning. It was just so obvious to the point where when I hear things like what you said, that you don't have a relationship with your dad, it blows my mind. The loss, the unnecessary hurt that is going on because people make the wrong decision. It should be so easy.
The dragon death should not be a thing. This should be the norm. Right. There should be the exception of the kind of asshole fathers. So forgive me.
And to be totally honest, I think we both benefit from some time elapsing where there's been progress in society in general to where it's easier for me to act like I did than it would have been 10, 20 years ago. I can't I can't like get on my high horse and say I'm like way better than like all these other dads that dealt with this 20 years ago, because it was more awful back then, and it's harder to do the right thing.
You know, you both have said something about coming out as a family, and whenever I think of coming out, I think of it as that was my experience. That was what I did and what I went through with my family. And I've never thought about it the way you've presented it. And I just wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about what that means to you and why it was so important to come out as a family and not as like your son or daughter coming out individually.
So when you're a Mormon, it's sort of assumed that you have this set of beliefs about gay people and what that means. And so if you don't want people to assume those things about you, you need to tell them. I had no desire for anyone to look at me and assume that I felt certain things about what I expected, about how I felt about my daughter or what I expected her life to look like. I wanted my daughter to have a healthy, full life just like anyone else. And the fact that that's not a given is really sad, but it's not a given. We were given all sorts of, oh, so you asked earlier, like what specific things we were told. So we were told, don't label her, just, you know, give her time to like sort it out. Don't, even though I wasn't labeling her, she was labeling herself, and I was accepting that. So you're surrounded by this group of people that are your friends, and you just feel like you need to let them know where you stand, because it's not a given. And you need to have, I felt like I need to have my daughter's back. Like, don't think that what you're thinking is okay to talk to my daughter about, because we're going to have a problem. Like, this is where we're at. We have my daughter's back.
Yeah. And I just look at it as, I totally agree and second all of that, especially with the culture thing. But for me, I just look at it as, I don't know. I mean, my son was 13, you know, and if he had been 15 or 16, I think I would have thought the same thing. I mean, if something great, I mean, I'll stereotype, if he gets, you know, if he hits the game winning home run on his baseball team, you know, it's like, I'm going to tell everybody that. We're all going to tell everybody that. It's like a thing that we all kind of share, you know, and it's just like if he got really ill or really sick or had cancer or something terrible, you know, it's like he doesn't have to own that by himself either. It's just, I don't know. Like, it's just life. And he was at the age where he's in our house, and it just felt like it was an us thing. You know, he's 19 next month. And now whatever he does, I mean, it's totally like a him thing, you know.
How does
he can do his stuff. But I don't know. I mean, there was some protection of it. And we did want to shield him from from a lot. It was more we wanted to shield him from what we didn't know than anything, from the unknown. So I think that's probably the biggest reason, but he ultimately, when it was all said and done, he knew more than we did. He was super, super confident about it. And, I mean, 3 weeks after, 3 weeks after he came out, was DC or no, maybe it was 2 months. Anyway, it was shortly after he came out, DC Pride, was going on in Washington, DC. And we were in Raleigh, North Carolina. And my wife dragged me up to Pride, and you kind of gave me some props, but you shouldn't go all the way, because I'm sitting here still thinking, like a month into it, like I knew I loved my kid and I was cool with it, but I was still, I had to work out my religious, I had to work out my political mindset, you know, and like unlearn and rethink and take time to like really dissect everything. I wasn't sure if I was even pro marriage equality, even though I knew I loved my kid. You know, there's a lot of things that didn't add up that I kind of had to work through.
Right. And I think, again, I said this earlier on the show. It's like, and I've said on the show several times, it took me years and years and years to forgive my parents for what I went through with them. And when I forgave them, it was the fact that I realized what I was going through, they were going through the same thing. I knew who I was. And they had to then rethink and relearn who their son was and readjust their entire life view. So it took me years to realize that they were in just as much turmoil and pain as I was. So you should never, ever, ever go and say, we shouldn't give you as much credit, because we should and we will, because you took the time to try. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't do that.
Well, I think you mourn the loss. I mean, people talk about it's sad, and I think because we were in tears as he was telling us, and we were worried to how those tears would be interpreted, you know. But we're not mourning. We're not sad that he's gay. We're mourning like the loss of the future that we were expecting, mm-hmm. right? And it really had nothing to do with him. It had to do with, I mean, he was an only child. It's like, oh, in our mind, we didn't know any better. I'm like, well, that means he's no daughter-in-law. That means, you know, because we'd always kind of wanted a daughter, right? There's all these things that you're kind of going through. You just don't know.
Yeah. And, don't know. And there's also the element too, at least with my parents, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'll never forget, my mom was so afraid of me dying. Because, you know, it was in the 90s and, you know, AIDS was still, you know, there was no Truvada. There were no, people were getting better and they were learning how to treat it, but there was no real safety net for people with HIV and or AIDS. And my parents just thought, okay, my son just came out to me and he's going to be dead.
Sure.
And that's tough. Oh, so I want to ask
Candace. No, she's just like.
Well, I could have sworn I heard she was going to say something, but I don't want certainly to interrupt anyone. But I want to bring it back to Dragon Dads. So okay. You guys have Dragon Dads. It is a Facebook group. Am I correct?
Yeah.
What is the plan for Dragon Dads? What are you guys doing with the group? Do you guys do any events? Any type of initiative to recruit other fathers that may be going through the same thing? Do you do public speaking? Because I swear that you guys need to. I think it would be an amazing thing to have two fathers or three go out and really talk about your experiences, because it could enlighten others. What are you doing with the Dragon Dads entity?
Okay. So I should say this, that the main reason that I feel that we really exist is to be a safety landing net for other dads. We're supporting like our kids and kind of the gay community, but really we're there to help educate other dads to not just to be good dads, just for their kids. So we're really targeting fathers of individual kids, not like a huge community across the board. Right. We were kind of at the beginning, and I, you know, like I said, when we went into it, I would have loved to have kind of joined something like this and had people that had kind of gone through it and could have shared the experience. But it's really cool. Now we have people that will join. And Don and I were just talking before we joined you guys, how much we've learned about the trans community from other fathers, you know, who have kids who are trans. And that's been unbelievably helpful and helped me to be more sensitive, you know, to the T in the LGBT, which gets so often forgotten. So as far as what we want to do, you know, we typically go March in Pride in Salt Lake, because that's where most of us are in Utah, and we can kind of have a pretty decent turnout. And so we have a presence there. And there's 30 to 50 of us usually that will go march in our really monochromatic gray. We wear gray and black t-shirts and really kind of Home Depot made ghetto dad signs.
The dragon attire, of course.
Yeah, but then we'll attend some of the events or whatever. But there's about 130 of us. We're not a large group, but we do span the country. And because of that, we're just kind of peppered throughout the country. So there's not a lot of us in any great local area. But I know Don and I will go down on occasion. There's a local, it's kind of a like a Boys and Girls Club for LGBTQ youth here called 1 in 10. And, you know, we'll go down and do donations there as often as we can and try to help out. And when we do, we'll wear our shirts, you know, just to kind of represent a little bit. But it's just two of us, you know. So I think we would like to do more. But our main purpose is to be visible. We have a public Facebook page to be visible for other people who are just looking for what we have to offer, which is really, just community for other dads to be able to provide education.
That's amazing.
But it's careful, because just like anything else, and you don't want to out anybody And we also have to, our group is a secret group because we have some kids or some dads whose kids are not out, but they're in the group. And so our vetting process and everything has to be very, very careful. And this is going to sound terrible, but the Mormon Church has history of planting people in different Facebook areas to try to uncover people who are supporting different things with the intention of like church discipline. So we have to be way more careful than you think we should be. And then we have to also be careful about how we talk about the Mormon Church within the group, because people are still in stages and they're in different spots. So for now, we remain pretty small and quiet, and we just try to stay available. But we've talked about, we'd be open to doing speaking and kind of getting out there, but it's hard to know how to do it.
I just want to speak to why that's so important. So it, in some way, that doesn't sound like a lot, just being a Facebook group where we're there for each other. But it can feel really isolating. When you are a member of a conservative religious community and you want to be supportive of something that the bigger group doesn't support, is really alienating. There's not a lot of venues to go and be validated with that. It's not as bad. I'm so glad I live in Arizona. Oh my gosh. It's not as bad in Arizona. But for a lot of people in Utah, Mormonism permeates everything. Like some, I know I have friends that work for the church, and if they were open as I am right now, they would not have a job anymore. So these kind of like small groups where you can come in and express yourself and learn what you need to learn and just be validated. It's really important.
So I know that we need to wrap this up, but I have two more things that I would really love to ask you guys. The first being, and you can split it up however you want. The first being is, how do your kids react to the fact that you guys are super visible and actually recently blew up?
They're like, badass dads.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And the second is, if there's another Mormon kid out there that's listening to our podcast and they don't know if their parents are going to be receptive, what would be your advice for them?
Well, say the second question again. I'm sorry.
So if there's another Mormon child or any child out there thinking about coming out and coming into themselves, how would you what advice would you give them to approach their parents if they're afraid that their Mormon parents wouldn't accept them or not?
Okay, I'll answer the second part first, because that's really hard to know.
Really hard.
It's really hard to know what to say, because it could go really bad. I don't know what to tell. All I can tell people is that I'll be there for them. I hope your dad is. I hope your dad's not a total a-hole. but he might be. And like a really well-intentioned asshole that will do really bad things thinking he's saving you. So I don't know. And early on, part of the struggle for our family is like, okay, supporting my daughter was never a question. But early on, I'm like, we're going to make this work. We're going to do the church thing and this. And then slowly you just realize how you just have to come to terms this painfully that those aren't compatible. And so my initial desire is, I'm going to stay in so I can be there for other kids that come out. And it's going to be super obvious that I'm safe and I can be there for people. So I don't know. I guess just... be realistic about what, I don't know.
Well, my rule of thumb here too is if they're under 18, I won't get into that. It just feels not okay to me.
Like I want to tell them.
Yeah,
to
you want to do something, you know, and you can give kind of encouragement, but I don't know if it's appropriate for a 15-year-old boy like who's messaging a 40-year-old man.
But your own son was messaging with someone, and
he was 22, right? Not that matters,
right?
But.
Right. He was 22, but he was also messaging another. He was messaging somebody that was, I mean, they were going through the same thing at the same time, pretty much, you know.
They were kind of family.
which is a little bit different, but if they're over 18 or whatever, I mean, like Don said, I will talk and I will engage and I will be there. And just try to just give them as much love as we possibly can to help them feel like there is, an adult male who maybe can be a father figure that does love him, regardless of how they feel at home. Because whether they want to come out or not come out to their parents, I kind of will leave that up to them. But I know at the same time, I can at least be there as a surrogate father or whatever. But to speak to your first question, because I know we are almost out of time, when you say about how, what our kids feel, and I can probably sum this up. Real simple, my son just says, he goes, my dad's gayer than I am.
I love it.
He might be right. I don't know. Which is what we want. I mean, the fact that he doesn't see it, he's not involved in everything, means that he has like this normal heterosexual life where he gets to like boys, you know, with like everybody else. And so,
well, Nick says all the time, we need to get to a point where coming out is just not a thing anymore.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So my daughter thinks it's mildly interesting, but just, it doesn't really affect her much. And I knew that similar. It's just a good sign that she's in a good place in general, and that my advocacy is maybe more for me than it is for her. That's so amazing. She had, you know who Willow Smith is? It's Will Smith's daughter. She's
yes.
a singer.
Yeah.
So my daughter loves her. She drew a picture of her, and Willow Smith reposted her picture and tagged her. The world had stopped.
You're like, what about all the stuff I've been doing?
The world had stopped. So that is what affects my daughter. I told her about this thing today. She goes, oh, that's today? Cool.
Well, either
my
way.
My daughter is just able to be a teenager, a gay teenager, and know that her family is celebrating her and loves her and has her back and doesn't have to worry about this too much, which is kind of how I want it.
That's the most That's important great. Thing. Yeah.
I tell you, your children are going to grow up to be, or, well, if they're grown now, but if not, they're going to grow up to be amazing individuals. And that is only because of the love and support that you as fathers and, of course, the mothers provided at a very young age, and being understanding and knowing that who we are and what we are as a community is nothing wrong other than just being human.
Amen.
And can I say one thing? I know we're out of time.
Absolutely.
Here,
no, no.
But
go ahead.
If there is any, but if there are any fathers out there, or you know, people in the gay, in the LGBTQ community who have a father, you can go to our Facebook page. We have a public Facebook page called Dragon Dads, and we have a way to contact one of us there if people do want to get introduced. We now, because of the recent, some of the press we've had recently, we do now have a handful, a lot more people that are not affiliated with the LDS Church. And so we've kind of branched out a little bit, which has been great for us as well, helped us kind of grow and see other perspectives. So
well, it totally is relevant to any kind of religious family, right? I mean, I think we think of the Mormon Church as a specific thing, but there are plenty. I mean, the Black Church, Christianity, Catholicism, they're all really strong in their beliefs against all things gay. And there are plenty of people in all the other religious communities who still need this sort of pragmatic advice on how to move forward, whether yeah. you are trying to come out or you're trying to be supportive of your kid in a, you know, combative space, because religious spaces can be combative when it comes to talking about being gay.
So, yeah, if you believe in Leviticus, then we welcome you. I know all of you get that, so yeah.
Oh, do we? All right, well, listen, Jake, Don, thank you so much for taking time out of your amazing day, which 117 degrees.
No, thank you.
And your time. For joining us on the show. It has truly been an honor. You've made us laugh. You've made us cry. You've made us feel emotions that probably we as adults now haven't felt.
Oh, I feel it every
in
day.
A while. Or at least I speak for me. You know, we have a mother sitting. She's a mother of two young, amazing, beautiful boys who's sitting here with us. And I'm sure that you're probably learning just as much as we do every day on this table, having guests such as yourselves joining us and talking about how you deal and how you navigate having or being or supporting someone in the LGBT community.
I agree. It's aspirational, right? My kids are 2 and 4, but I want to believe that when something, anything comes up with them, that one, they'll feel like they can come and tell me, and two, I will react in the appropriate way.
Well, I hope is gay, you'll be the luckiest mother in the world. So.
That is a good point.
So with that, gentlemen, again, thank you. You have an open invitation. If something big is happening, let us know. You're more than welcome to come join us on the show anytime.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
All right, so that was Jake and Don from Dragon Dads. If you guys want to go check out their public Facebook page, you can do so by going to Facebook and looking up Dragon Dads. They are available on Facebook. I'm just in awe of such amazing humans that we get to surround ourselves with and talk to every day. It's just absolutely amazing. So, Candace, can you elaborate a little bit more? I know that you've been silently sitting in that little corner over there, assimilating all this information. How did that make you feel?
It made me feel emotional. I mean, I read the piece on Sarah Cunningham earlier and was crying, right? Just thinking, I have had experience where I'm just like, if you're a parent worth anything, right? If you can't see things that are happening to other children, other people's kids, and not feel an emotional, visceral response, then you're really not worth anything. Because, like, I put my kids in that situation, and I can't help but feel all the feels. And so with them, again, I just said, being religious, being a religious person, and then having to deal with a situation that so specifically and so strongly combats everything about your faith. I mean, we get into these conversations about the LGBTQ community with people who wouldn't call themselves homophobes or homophobic, but everything that they're saying is homophobic, and it's sort of crouched in this, well, it's just like the right thing, right? And it's, no, that's actually homophobic.
Right.
And there's nothing about them that we would have thought originally that they were, but then this information comes out and you realize that it's just in all of your situation, in all of your interactions, you could come up against people who are just so steadfast that there's no room for you to be that.
You know, I have a question for you, actually. And Chris, I feel like you haven't talked. I feel bad.
Chris doesn't feel good today.
Chris has been hungover since Sunday.
You could have left that part out.
But so I don't necessarily want to bring race into it, but I'm gonna.
It's hard not to. I'm black all the time,
yeah,
all day.
Beautiful black woman. Right. Can't take enough. But so I know a lot of black gay men and their experience, and same with Hispanic as well. Thomas talked about it. Their experience coming out in the African-American community is in a lot of ways way harder than in the Caucasian community. I don't know if you could speak to that a little bit, why you think that is, or...
I mean, I don't have all the answers, but I'll
you have
say
a podcast. You
I
have
do,
all the answers. Right? Hello?
I don't have all the answers. I just think that in the black community, like black is, we don't think it, but the rest of the world sees black as an affliction. It's a thing that we have to deal with. And a lot of parents who were faced with their kids coming out on the in the community, on the spectrum, see it as another thing. Like, it's just one other thing piled on top of black man gay, right? Like, or black woman gay. Like, it's just another thing to like as if we don't have enough, you're going to throw gay on top of it. Like, as if we don't have enough people coming at us for blah, 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 you're going to now tell people that you're gay. So I feel like a lot of the fear, again, you said your mom thought you were going to die. It's just like another reason for us to die, or another reason for people to attack us, to come at us. So, you know, on one hand, there's that. There's like a parental fear for your kid with all the things that you already have to be afraid for. And then on the other hand, a lot of black people are religious, whatever kind of religious, whether they're, you know, a lot of black Muslims, a lot of black Christian, and the like
Baptist
spectrum of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And people pick and choose parts of the Bible to support their really strong beliefs about anything, right? Like, you shouldn't eat pork, you shouldn't eat lobster, you shouldn't be gay. Like, it's kind of crass to put those things together, but you can find something in the Bible to support that if that's what you want to do. And if people are like in church all the time, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday Bible study, like all of the things, it's hard for them to step back from that.
Right.
And I just fall back again on it's really easy to be so strong in your commitment to, I don't know if anti-gay is the right thing to say, but it's in your commitment to your views on gay because you don't know anybody. And I just stick to, you're probably not really paying attention to the people around you.
Mm-hmm. Walk down the street.
Honey. Right. Walk down the street or just like open your eyes. I feel like in my own family, and I don't think I'm outing anybody. In my own family, I feel like there's been plenty of years where people, my generation, my sibling, my cousins and up, like we know, but all of a sudden the family is sort of like recognizing it now when people are in their 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. right? But like we've known for a long time, or I know in other families, it's like, oh, but you guys don't talk about the fact that he's gay. And I was like, are you guys okay with the fact that he's gay? And I was like, yeah, of course we're okay with it. I was like, yeah, but he sort of lives this life where we never talk about his personal life, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's not even that he's got a stand-in girlfriend. It's just that we hear all about his business, we hear all about his travel, but we don't hear about any of the other things that would just so easily come up with our straight family members.
Exactly.
And so it almost feels to me like some people in families live in this weird gray area of tolerance based on not talking about it.
Tolerance based on ignorance.
Based on ignorance. But like a willful ignorance.
Yeah.
Because
like
I'm aware.
But
we talk
about
it when you're not here. Right? We know something's going on, mm-hmm. but we're not gonna talk about it in front of you, and we're not gonna, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a very, I feel like I'm in that situation a lot where mm-hmm. where I feel like I know and I don't understand why you don't know. Like
it's, oh yeah. I get it. It's crazy.
All right. Well, so listen, we've got probably about, I would say probably 5 or 7 minutes to close it out, get everything that needs to be done to close out the show. So why don't we jump into our gay talk term?
Oh, that's not me this week.
Well,
and
I'm so excited.
It's not Trish this week. And because we have Candace joining us from the Breezy Moms podcast, we had asked her to pick a term for us and then also read it for you all.
All right. So I've never seen this book before. But it's purple,
uh-huh.
which must be a thing, right? Mm. Do we not talk about the book?
No, but you know the show. You know how to start this segment, do you not?
Right.
This week's Gay Talk term is brought to you
by... No, I don't know how...
Okay, me and Chris will get you kicked off. All right, so everybody, this week's Gay Talk term brought to you, of course, by...
UnicornBooty.com!
Not really, and that's when I come in and I say, not really, right?
Is... Candace, take it away.
Is deliver a baby...
Tell us what it is.
Early 60s, to remove the pants and expose a hard-on, synonym, take the meat out of the basket.
There it is.
To deliver a baby.
Which I thought was funny, because I just like leafed through the book and looked at the first thing, and it was deliver a baby, which is perfect for Breezy Moms, right? Like
for Breezy Moms and this entire episode.
That one
and
dirty entire... unicorn booty.
All right. So so we also have on this day in gay history, which will probably be the only time you've heard Christopher speak throughout the host show.
Chris He's has not been hurting. Well. Chris has been hurting. But so. I'm here. I made it.
Hi, Christopher. I missed that voice. So why don't you go ahead and take this away, Chris?
Yes, of course. On this day in gay history, brought to you by
UnicornBooty.com.
Not really.
There it is. When July 30th, 1971, in New York, lesbians picketed Cookies Bar. The lesbian bar made it known that lesbians working for gay liberation were not welcome, and the bar would not, quote, cooperate in being exploited. Lesbians held several protests at the bar in 1970 and 1971.
So, and this was the year after, right? 1970, 71, the year after the Stonewall riots.
Yes.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know
that. A lot of history
that.
Out in New York those
days. Oh, let me tell you. That was a very, very tumultuous, I can't believe I said that word right.
Tumultuous.
Yeah, time for the LGBT community coming out of New York City in the late 60s and even in San Francisco. All right, so we are going to continue and wrap up the show. We've got some announcements. If you love the show, make sure that you rate and review on your favorite podcasting service. This helps others know about the show and ensures it becomes more visible within the podcasting community. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite favorite device or web browser as soon as the episode is published. You can also support us on Patreon. Patreon is a service that allows our listeners to help support the show with a pledge donation, which we collect on a monthly basis and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more.
And next week, we return with the next segment, the next installment of From Top to Bottom with Dr. Evan Goldstein, our monthly pre-recorded segment providing valuable information on sexual health.
I love it. I love that, man.
And thank you to our guest co-host, Candace.
Thank you.
From the Breezy Moms podcast. Candace, you want to plug your show at all?
My show is here, right where you are, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. We talk mom trash.
Yeah, mommy stuff.
Where can
mommy
they find stuff. You on social media?
Oh, the, what is it?
Breezy Moms podcast.
listen.
Tom's a producer.
Mom brain. So Breezy Mom podcast on Facebook, Breezy Mom podcast at Gmail, all the Breezy Moms. And I'm on all the same places that, first of all, I'm on Digital Stream Radio, and I'm on all the places where you can find your podcast.
She's even on Spotify, and we're not on Spotify.
I'm just saying, but that's okay. Get with it.
We would also like to send a huge, huge thank you to the Dragon Dads. I mean, can we really say more about that, but give them claps? They are amazing men, and they are supporting the LGBT youth community in a way that we can only hope every man does around the world. And then, of course, don't forget, if you enjoy listening to this hot mess, it's time to vote for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. Visit www.podcastawards.com. Click the listener nomination link and vote for your favorite podcast and ours. Hello?
Today and tomorrow is the last day, because nominations close on the 31st, which is tomorrow. So get it together. Get out there. We're going to produce, publish, and make sure that you listeners can listen to it tonight. And hopefully tomorrow we'll get some votes in and we'll have news or not if we win or not. All right.
Or nominated.
Christopher.
Or
not.
Can we put a rubber on my life?
Yes. I'm going to put a rubber on your entire body, but go for it.
All righty, guys and gals. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under shown episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick, you totally stole my thunder. Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab right at the top of your web browser, where you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast, or submit a question for an individual host, which is usually Chris.
Super busy.
You can also call us and leave us a question via voice message. We can answer your questions on the show. Just call 334-GATE-TALK, or if you need those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream once again by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.